You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although they've only been around for a relatively short time, it's hard to imagine life now without the personal computer, the web, and wireless technology. In an effort to explore what other indispensable or at least fun objects are in store for us in the future, the Museum of Modern Art has mounted a new exhibit called Design and the Elastic Mind. It runs through May 12th, and I'm delighted that it brings to our studio now senior curator Paola Antonelli, who helped organize the show. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And also designer Chris Lash, who is one of the designers featured in it. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be here.
I can remember a time before cell phones, but I don't understand now how I managed to live without one. Did anyone realize, Paola, when they were introduced, just how indispensable they would become?
One never knows. And, you know, it's interesting because there are so many wrong predictions that you can find on the web. You know, just great people at the beginning of the 20th century saying that airplanes could never be used by the militaries, the TV would never work. I mean, it's always like that. That's why innovation is called disruptive, because people don't want it.
And home computers?
Home computers, too. You know, at the beginning, they were clunky and they were unsightly and they ruined the whole furniture until Apple came.
So is it really just a matter of people not recognizing the full implications of an innovation at first? Is that why they don't understand it, or they just resist change?
At first, innovation ruins your life. You have to get used to a new device. You have to get used to new keyboards. Even when you switch from one cell phone to the other, at first you're a little annoyed. So it's the job of the designers to actually make that transition simpler, smoother, and even more fun.
And Chris, Paola mentioned that Apple changed the whole idea of the home computer because the design suddenly made it appealing to people.
I think it made it usable. It made it something. The interface, the OS, made it something that could communicate the kind of core functionality that was designed for one purpose. It turned it into something that could be kind of misused in a way as another purpose. It turned a kind of computation machine into a communication machine.
So as a designer, are you thinking about also beyond what you're trying to accomplish, doing a design thing that might overcome the public resistance?
Well, we're fans of science because it opens up kind of new ways for us to go through our work, to present our work, and to new things that we can accomplish with our work. We take innovations in science, and the tools are becoming more and more fluid and more usable. We're able to access this information more easily. And taking information that is oriented for one purpose and in a way misusing it or putting it into a different context that kind of opens up entire new territories to the research. It's this kind of mismatch that accounts for a lot of evolution in design.
He keeps on talking about misusing things. I have enough trouble just being able to use these things at first.
But, you know, they're constructive mistakes. That's really, if you are allowed to play, then you're allowed to make mistakes, and it's not a tragedy. And then you go back without being intimidated. That's what they do a lot.
Now, what led you to come up with the title for this exhibit, Design and the Elastic Mind?
Well, you know very well how to come up with title, Leonard. And, you know, you just write 6 pages of titles. Then you go home, you get a glass of wine, you close your eyes, and you listen to your stomach. So I really did that. You know, it was about looking at my own life and how much we have to stretch back and forth. And, you know, some of us get stretch marks, others are more elastic. And I wanted to show how designers help us negotiate through all the different changes in our everyday life.
And we understand how the mind has been stretched with some of the new technologies. All you have to do is watch a kid who has some little thing on the subway that totally baffles me, but picked it up right away.
And you're completely right. You can put a 4-year-old in front of any kind of device and they know exactly what's on, off, forward, backwards. You know, they know it already instinctively.
How did you go about organizing this show? I understand that one of the influences was Charles and Ray Eames' Powers of Ten.
Definitely, because the show, you know, as it always happens, can be looked at from many different viewpoints.
Well, and Eames is a famous chair. They did more than just do a chair?
Oh, my. Charles and Ray Eames were so much more than chair designers, and they were so much more than furniture designers. They kind of invented multimedia. You know, they were the first ones to do a PowerPoint presentation before PowerPoint existed. They were doing it with slides. And, you know, Powers of Ten was a book that had been written by a scientist, and they transformed it into a video that showed how you can go through different scales of perception. And that was in 1968, and then they redid it in the 70s. But the idea of going through scale by means of design was one of the leitmotifs of the show, definitely. And then there were many other ways to just observing reality in a very organic, or you can say chaotic way, and looking at what designers were doing, their conversation with scientists.
And there was a time when we consider these things as separate, although maybe there's always been some science in the making of art. But when did scientists and designers realize that they should collaborate?
It happened, well, you can go back to Leonardo da Vinci and that condenses.
Yeah, but he seems like
person.
An exception at the time.
Yes and no. I mean, artists and scientists have been collaborating forever. Artists and designers and architects have been collaborating. Scientists and designers and architects still had an interface in the middle that was engineers and technology people. But, you know, at this point, so many of these distinctions fall apart. For instance, Chris and his partner Ben are considered architects, but they're also designers, and they dabble with science. So it really is the purpose, the intention, and the outcome that makes the difference.
And we were talking about the Eames Powers of Ten. You have, Chris, a thing called the Rules of Six. So is this all about numbers? We have a slideshow of some of the things in the exhibit, and we have some images from the Rules of Six. Can you explain what it is?
The Rules of Six is we were pleased to be asked by Paola to contribute a piece to the show that took on the issue of scale, and specifically the scale of the very, very small, the scale of the atom itself, which is measured in nanometers, or kind of 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter. So we teamed up with a material scientist that we knew from UC Berkeley named Matt Scullin, and we wanted to explore concepts that are becoming common to design and to science, namely this idea of replacing kind of top-down rules for defining form, replacing that with bottom-up rules of formation. They refer to it as so-called self-assembly, which says that under the right conditions, molecules will come together and form by themselves, that they will build larger structures on their own.
And that's how life evolved on Earth.
That's how life evolved on Earth, and now scientists and increasingly designers...
Except Mike Huckabee doesn't believe that, but...
are using it, are kind of using these techniques to create new materials in the lab, and that's what nanoscience is about. And we are looking to port those kind of techniques into a design context. So our piece in the show was about, in a way, growing a piece in the space of the gallery.
Now that's thinking small, but you also, aren't you working on a three-dimensional drawing of the universe?
Yeah, that's another collaborative project, which also involves scientists, but also along with musicians, and is headed by an artist. We're working with the artist Matthew Ritchie to take his drawing system, which is about a kind of personal cosmology, and turning it into a three-dimensional inhabitable drawing of the universe.
Well, you recently won a Young Architects Award here in New York. How does this connect to architecture?
How does all this stuff connect to architecture? It is architecture. Our work tends to be kind of indifferent to scale. The same techniques we hold can be used to design furniture, design fruit bowls, design molecules, design buildings, design cities.
Now, there are people who are resisting all of this, and we have the slow food movement, for example. We have I can't tell you how many people come on the show and say, well, I still write everything out longhand. I do not use a computer. Or I write on an old battered Remington typewriter. I don't accept email. So even smart people don't really get it, or maybe they shouldn't get it. Is this for everybody?
Of course. I think there's room for everybody in this world. And, you know, even in the exhibition, there's a vase that's been made by 40,000 bees, and the designer who forced the bees to make this vase calls it slow prototyping. So I think that there's really space today, and that's the beauty of it, for everybody to take their own choice and live the way they want.
Now, that's one of the images on our slideshow, the honeycomb vase made by bees, really beautiful. It's a honeycomb that is in a full circle.
Yeah.
Train the bees to do that?
No, what he did is he built a scaffold, so a form that was already kind of made of wax a little bit, so it was convincing for the bees. And then he set the colony free with the queen bee that they needed to impress at the top, and there they went, and they built it.
We also have a punch bag handbag, the Epidermis Interactive Pet, which people should look at.
I love the epidermis, yeah.
The Aqua Ray, but the one that I have to ask about, because we're running out of time, as a dog owner, I'm especially intrigued by the LED dog tail communicator.
The idea is that we use different ways to communicate between people, with machines, and even with dogs. And these two designers, James Auger and Jimmy Loiseau from London, devised this LED tail attachment that, depending on how fast the tail wags, gives you different messages, like, you know, I want to eat, I want to go out and take a walk, I love you. It's quite pretty and fun.
In fact, sometimes dog tail wags suggest that they has nothing to do with whether they're happy to see you at all, but whether they're threatened.
You would know better. You talk to your dog, you know.
Chris, how big is the Rules of Six?
The Rules of Six is about 14 and a half feet wide and 12 feet high.
So it's still pretty big, even though we're thinking on an atomic and molecular level.
Well, that's the idea, that that these rules in the end are quite abstract and can scale from the size of a molecule to the size of a city. And our piece consists of two parts. One is the large scale wall relief. And the other are two monitors. One shows an algorithm kind of playing the rules out live in the gallery for the duration of the exhibition. So it's in the end, it's really information, and it's information that allows it's for this scaling, and it doesn't kind of belong natively to any particular scale or any particular environment.
When the museum commissioned it, did they give you any direction or just total free rein?
We had a... You know, we were charged to talk about certain ideas that were about scale, but within that, we were lucky to have a long leash.
Well, I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about someone like Saul LeWitt, who came at similar kinds of thinking totally from a sculptural point of view. But I guess all these things do connect.
Yeah, and one of the best parts of my job is to enable people to think. You know, so that was a good opportunity.
Well, I want to thank you so much, both of you, for being here. Paola Antonelli is the senior curator, a senior curator at the Museum of Modern Art and the organizer of Design and the Elastic Mind, which runs through May 12th at the museum. There's also a fabulous book, which is published by the Museum of Modern Art. And as I said, there's a lot of stuff on our show page at WNYC.org. Chris Lash is from the firm Aranda Lash. And I'm looking forward to seeing your three-dimensional drawing of the universe.
Thanks, me too.
Thank you, Leonard.